how to start. Right, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, procedurally, I will start maybe to request that we get to the business of the day. When we are ready, we can start then. I was worried with these movements. Chief Hospital, no. Procedurally, my name is Pat Sibande. The meeting is one. We're having one meeting, not two meetings. My name is Pat Sibande. I'm originally from Mpumalanga province, but I'm the chairperson of this committee. Therefore, I'll request everybody inside here to introduce himself or herself, but I'll start with the members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, chairperson. My name is Mabija Lebohane. I'm from the province Limpopo. I'm a member of this select committee.
Good morning. I'm Matt Christina Temba, a member of this committee representing Mpumalanga and the NCOP.
Good morning, thanks, Chair. I'm Buisola Jacobs, the whip of the committee from the Free State.
Good morning. My name is Kunal Tapia. I'm a member of this committee and I'm representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dirk Feldman from Gauteng, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am Herman Groenewald, member of this committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elsa van Lingen from the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of the NCOP, but not a member of this committee.
From KwaZulu-Natal. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, honorable members and officials from the department. I'm Ratoriti Tau, representing the Northern Cape in this committee.
Therefore, I'll give it to the department to introduce itself.
Morning, everyone. Johannes Machart is my name. Director, Corporate Legal, Department of Transport.
Morning, everyone. I'm Advocate Masombuga, Chief Director, Legal Services, Department of Transport.
Good morning. I'm Alex Vanicker from Sandrock.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, colleagues, my name is Chris Davisa, Department of Transport National.
Morning, my name is Bondi Talasi, I'm the parliamentary officer.
Morning, honorable members and colleagues, my name is Sipoli Bagwan from the Office of the DG in the Department of Transport.
Good morning, my name is Tasneem, I'm the parliamentary liaison officer for the Deputy Minister of Transport.
Therefore, I'll give it to our staff to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Palit Zabu. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, members. My name is Gary Rada, and I'm the legal advisor to the committee.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning. My name is Surai Williams, and I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Tepo Makani. I'm a researcher for the committee. morning all. Shuaib Dinesan, content advisor to the committee.
Thank you very much. I'll request you at the back to also introduce yourself, because we wanted to know who's inside here. And then before I give it to you, I'll request one thing, which is the key fundamental one. We must try to control our cell phones. You can either switch it off or put it in silence, please. At the back there, let's start from Zama. May you please introduce yourself as well. Use mic, please. Use your mic. Come closer to the mic.
Good morning, honorable members and staff and colleagues. My name is Amam Vlan. I'm in the office of the Chief of the National Council of Provinces.
Good morning. I'm Olga Swanapul from Sonrong.
Good morning, honorable chairpersons and members. I'm Prashant Mon from the National Department of Transport.
Let's come this side at the back. May you please introduce yourself, please. PMG, media, whatever. Come closer to the mic.
Morning, everyone. My name is Yabong Mkwanazi from the New Age.
Good morning, everybody. I am Pam Sachse, and I'm from Legal Brief with Due to Law.
Good morning. My name is Alex Tarr from PMG.
Good morning, members. Ewald Botha, researcher for NCOP members, Groenewald and Van Lennep.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Thank you very much. I think we have already done justice by introducing ourselves. Without wasting any time, what I wanted to request is to request the department to do the subject of the day today by give us a briefing on transport, by the Department of Transport, on the transport laws and related matters speaking. Over to you, Department.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, we are here to brief you and the committee on the Transport Laws and Related Matters Amendment Bill 2012, the Section 75 Bill. As a matter of background, Chairperson, I will give the background as to why the SANRA. The South African National Road Agency Limited, SANRA, was established in terms of the South African National Road Agency Limited and National Road Act No. 7 of 1998, the SANRAL Act. The SANRAL Act provides for the establishment of SANRAL to manage and control the Republic's national road system and take charge of the development, maintenance, rehabilitation of national roads within the framework of government policy. The bill has been necessitated by the development of the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project as well as future plans for the development of road infrastructure in the Republic. Apart from the physical infrastructure, the GFIP will result in the operation of a road network that involves the utilization of intelligent transport systems. An important component of network is the electronic toll collection system. The bill is essential to enable the appropriate implementation of the electronic toll collection system. When the Act was promulgated, the electronic toll collection was not envisaged in its current form. The Act is not broad enough to cater for some aspects of the electronic toll collection. The Act I'm referring to, that is the SANRAL Act, the Principal Act. The bill will facilitate the collection of tolls and the implementation of the electronic toll collection system. These measures are essential to implement the GFIP, e.g. to upgrade transport infrastructure and public transport in the Gauteng province and beyond, as well as other proposed projects. The bill seeks to provide more effectively the collection of toll, that is the object of the bill. The bill seeks to provide more effectively for the collection of toll, to amend the Cross-Border Road Transport Act No. 4 of 1998 to empower cross-border road transport agents to collect tolls on behalf of SANRAL, to amend the SANRAL Act by inserting a definition, and that definition is the definition of the word owner, to further provide for the differentiation in respect of the amount of toll that may be levied, to provide that the regulations made by the minister must be published by notice in the Government Gazette, to provide for the minister to also make regulations relating to specified toll-related matters, to provide the minister to publish the draft regulation in the Gazette calling for public comments, to provide for certain presumptions relating to the driving, operation and use of a vehicle on a toll road and the use of electronic evidence to prove an alleged contravention of the Sunrail Act. To exclude the levying and collection of toll from the ambit of the National Credit Act 2005, to amend the contents of the Sunrail Act and to provide for matters connected therewith. Discussion of the bill. These are the clause by clause discussions of the bill as it stands before the committee. Clause 1 of the bill seeks to amend Section 4 of the Cross Border Road Transport Act by empowering the Cross Border Road Transport Act Agency to collect toll on behalf of SAMRA. Clause 2 seeks to insert the definition of the owner in order for the owner of the vehicle to be responsible for the payment of toll. Clause 3 seeks to amend Section 27(3)(b) of the SAMRA Act to provide a means of differentiating the amount of toll available according to whether toll is prepaid depending on the use of an e-tag or some other device as compared with identification through license number recognition. Clause 3 further seeks to provide for the agency in cooperation with the municipality contemplated in subsection 4(b)(2) and the province in which the proposed toll road is situated to perform a socio-economic and traffic impact assessment pertaining to the proposed toll road, which must be submitted to the minister and made available to the province and every municipality contemplated in subsection 4B. Clause 3 further seeks to provide for the agents to indicate the outcome of the socio-economic and traffic impact assessment pertaining to the proposed toll road and step proposed to mitigate against the impact or likely impact on the alternative roads with regard to maintenance and traffic management that may result from the declaration of a toll. Clause 4 seeks to provide for the minister to publish the regulations by notice in the Gazette. To provide for the minister to also make regulations relating to specified toll-related matters. To provide for the minister to publish a draft of the proposed regulations in the Gazette calling for public comments. The clause further imposes a duty on the minister to submit the published draft regulation to Parliament for comment. Clause 5 seeks to insert Section 59(a)(3). In the Sunrail Act to provide for a presumption that any electronic evidence must be deemed to be correct in the absence of evidence to the contrary. This aims to facilitate law enforcement and assist in the prosecution relating to non-payment of tolls. Clause 6 seeks to amend the heading of Section 60 of the Sunrail Act and provide for the exclusion of Sunrail Act from the ambit of National Credit Act, Act No. 84 of 2005 in relation to the levying and collection of tolls. Clause 7 provides for the amendment of the contents of the Act to reflect the insertion of Section 59A. Clause 8 provides for the short title and commencement of the Act. Our bill consists of 8 amendments, and that is the content of the bill as it stands currently. Consultation. A draft amendment bill was published in Gazette No. 31715 of 19 December 2008. 2 draft bills providing for transport laws and related matters, which also include similar amendments to some of the amendment bill, were published in Gazette No. 33027 and Gazette No. 33028 on the 15th March 2010. What it means here, initially when we started to develop the bill, we developed one single bill, which was a mixed bill, meaning containing issues pertaining to Section 75 and issues containing to Section 76 in one bill. And based on the advice we received from the state law advisors, we were advised that to separate that 76 bill, we advised that we need to separate the bill into a Section 75 bill and a Section 76 bill. And that was done. That is why we are saying 2 draft bills providing for the transport laws and related matters were published in those 2 gazettes, 33027 and 33028 on the 15th March 2010. So the bill that we are considering currently is the Section 75 bill. The Transport Laws and Related Matters Amendment bill that contains Section 75 issues is still to come. So that contains 76 issues still to come. The current one that is before you is a 76 bill because the 75. Yes, thank you. It's a 75 bill. It's a 75 bill that is before you. The bill was also presented for input to the Shareholders Committee of the Road Traffic Management Corporation Comments were received from the following institutions: Public Entity Oversight and Border Control, the South African Chamber of Commerce, the South African Tourism Service Association, the South African Police Service, the Cross Border Road Transport Agency, the RTMC, the National Treasury, and FALGA. The bill was developed and finalized by the department in consultation with National Treasury. The financial implications of the bill are as follows. The bill is vitally necessary to enable the collection of toll for the GFIP. A lack of appropriate legislative authority to collect tolls would place the entire project at risk. The non-collection of tolls may impact negatively on the ability of the other state-owned enterprises to raise capital for their infrastructure programs, and thus the need for the bill must also be seen in the context of government's plan to fund its envisaged infrastructure programs. SANRAL has issued bonds to fund the project of 24 billion, initial capital cost amounting to approximately 20.6 billion, plus capitalized interest amounting to approximately 3.4 billion. That need to be repaid from toll revenue. Failure to collect tolls and repay the bonds would have very serious financial implications for SANRAL and also for the national government, which provided a guarantee in respect of most of the SANRAL bonds. The financial consequences of ineffective collection of toll to SANRAL and government due to the guarantee would be both reputational and costly inability to collect revenue would damage the credit reputation amongst investors, who may price the bonds higher to cover the risk and sell the bonds. This in turn would have a negative impact on both SANRAL and possibly the government's credit ratings. Furthermore, the inability to collect toll at the predicted levels would result in lower revenue available to service debt and force further debts to be incurred to fund the shortfall. This would be costly in terms of interest paid as well as the credit reputational impact explained earlier. The financial implications for the overall project also include future maintenance costs, road rehabilitation and operational costs, servicing of debts, interest, bracket, and other toll-related costs. Therefore, ineffective toll collection would result in this cost to be funded from other government resources in the future, and thereby reducing government's ability to meet its disparate demands. The parliamentary procedure. The state advisor and the Department of Transport are of the opinion that the bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 75 of the Constitution, since it contains no provision to which the procedure set out in Section 74 of the Constitution applies. Furthermore, the state advisors are of the opinion that it is not necessary to refer the bill to the. National House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 18(1)(a) of the Traditional Leaders and Governance Framework Act 2003, Act Number 41 of 2003, since it does not contain provisions pertaining to customary law or customs and traditional communities. That is the end of the presentation, and we request the committee to consider and approve the bill. In a nutshell, this bill amends the Principal Act, the SANRAL Act, amends the Cross Border Act to facilitate and ensure a proper smooth collection of toll. We have inserted the definition of the owner. We have defined the definition of the owner by reference to the National Road Traffic Act and the Cross Border Road Transport Act. We have empowered the minister to make regulations that are toll related, and we have further obliged the minister during consultation stage after publication of the Gazette for comments to submit a copy of that gazette to Parliament for Parliament's comment. So that is the nature of the bill in essence, or in short. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members, that was the presentation from the department. Therefore, procedurally, I'd like to give this opportunity to members to start to interact with the presentation by clarity seeking or else to ask questions as well. I'll start that side, come this way. Honourable Member Dow.
Well, just a quick one, Chair. I don't want to ask a question now. I think it should have been an oversight on the part of the department, because this is the first official presentation to the committee on the absence of the minister, the absence of the DG. If there is an apology, may such an apology be raised so that it is on record. And I'm raising this in the background with an understanding that the National Council of Provinces as a House of Parliament is a very important institution. And an impression should not be created out there that this House is not taken serious, where even you do not have apologies from the senior political leadership of the department or the senior administrative leadership of the department. So can that be raised so, just so that it is on record? And then from there we can proceed. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'd like to take this matter back to, before maybe I comment anything about this matter to the department, maybe to, if they do have any apology.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. I think the point taken. We, according to our parliamentary liaison officer, Sibongile, the apology was sent in writing to the committee because the minister is out of the country and he is back on the first. He is back next week, so that is why he's not here today. So the apology was sent in writing. I think we wanted just to highlight. We thought that maybe the chairperson would have or the secretariat would have that. Thank you.
Any further apology? Sorry, to the committee, I request that the meeting to be one, please. Only one meeting.
On the side of the acting director general, she has another commitment. That is why we had to come here and represent her. She is not available today. She has got another prior engagement to the matter. So I am Chris Lavisa, deputy director general on road transport issues. That is why we are representing the acting director general, Dr. Maria Dutoit. Thank you.
Right, from my side, before, sorry. From my side, honorable members, as well as department, I've received a call, only a call, this morning about the apology on the behalf of the minister, the deputy minister, or the minister who's not inside the country, that they are committed somewhere. It's only today, a call from the minister's office. That is the only one. But also to re-emphasize what was raised by Honorable Member Dow is that, time and again we have emphasized that, please, we don't need a jiga-jiga story. Take this select committee very serious, because the buck stopped here. And I think that is it, because I wouldn't have a problem if nothing was raised with me. But because something was raised with Elif this morning before we started with this committee, I think that it's having a value itself. Therefore, I'll give it back to the members. I've started with Dao. Let's come to the subject of the day.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, thank you for your and Honorable Tau's comment on this issue. I feel very, very upset in the way national handle the NCOP, and especially this select committee. We can't go on like this, and I've also had a presentation here this morning, Chair, and I want you to protect me on this, and also give me time to continue and finish with it, because there's a lot of questions in it, and I want answers on these questions from the department as well. So, firstly, the DA is not against e-tolling in principle, but our main concern is there was no public participation, and that is what we worried about. The problem lies in the lack of public participation. If the bill is now approved without public participation, the public and provinces will forever lose the right to oppose this e-tolling principles. The public and provinces can only object the environmental impact assessment of the specific e-toll road, and therefore only argue to mitigate the fatal flaws of the EIA outcomes when they have already lost the principal tolling argument. In all EIAs, the payers is favored and wins. A huge concern is the cross-border agency, of which the public knows very little. Argument of Section 4, Act 4 in 1998. Section of 4, the Cross-Border Road Transport Act 1998, is hereby amended by the additional of the following subsection. The agency may collect toll on behalf of SANRAL in terms of the agreement between the agency and SANRAL, concluded under Section 28.1A of SANRAL and National Road Act 1998, Act No. 7 of 1998. This implied that SANRAL will have a sub-agency to collect the toll fee. The taxi industry moving beyond the cross-border boundaries. And I just want to repeat this. However, this agency cannot even manage the taxi industry moving beyond the cross-border boundaries, cannot administrate their financial with Auditor General, AG, disclaimers on annual financial statements, AFS, for the last couple of years. And in the light of this above, how can they possibly handle the collection of obscene e-tolling amounts? Tagging, the DA opposed the tagging of the bill for the following reasons. E-tolling is a localized issue and involves provinces and municipalities, and the bill was targeted as a Section 75 national bill and not a Section 76 bill, provincial bill. During the tagging process, both the DA and the NA in the national objective to Section 75 tagging, taking away the right of provinces, metros and local municipalities. Process in the NA, although the committees went through the process of ticking the boxes, some serious constitutional rights were violated. Section 56 of the Constitution.
Sorry, I heard violent.
No. Violator.
Oh,
violator.
You know what, sorry, before you continue, I'm very concerned. I would request that we ask questions, not statements.
But no, that's not a speech, Chairperson. I must put the facts on the table so that we can have a clear answer at the end of the day. And I will make statements.
Okay.
It is true. I will make statements to get the right answer at the end
right.
of the day and to
member,
make it clear to all of us.
Okay, fine.
Point of order.
Order, yes. Honorable.
No, thank you very much, Chair, that you managed to pick it up, because I was really going to raise it. You said the Honorable Member now is presenting a speech as if we are debating in the House. We will have time to debate the bill in the House. If you oppose the bill, then that shall be the platform in which we will engage with one another, politically and otherwise, whether we oppose or not. But at the moment, let us allow ourselves an opportunity to engage with the department, ask the relevant questions for clarity, and allow the department to respond to those questions.
than to make political statements that are vague, wide, and that are really provocative. Because some of the statements that are made requires responses. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Jacobs, before I give it back.
Yeah, Chair, I concur with Honorable Tao, because that statement would be diverting our attention, because we want to ask the department questions. Because if he's making a statement, we'll ask him the questions instead of asking the department the question.
Chairperson.
All right. Before you know what I'm requesting, honorable member who's going to take a platform, let us focus on the presentation. And then the time will come where we'll be having an opportunity to go and debate in the House. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to get back. We must put the facts on the table. Otherwise, we are not taking part in a process. And this is the platform where the NCLP and especially this select committee can take part in. And if you want me to debate it in the House, it means nothing to us. I want the answers now from the department, what is going on, and I've got a lot of questions. But when I'm talking about the cross-border, I must make a statement to get an answer. I can't just ask the answer. From where is my question coming from there? So I must make a statement, and then I will. My questions is there. So please, bear with me. I think that is very important that we go through this whole situation.
Sorry. So the honourable member, let me take you back to this. Please, now, let's focus on the presentation. You know what, now? Because our task was to make sure that we interact, with this presentation so that we certify ourselves in terms of our nine function. And we're not surprising you, but we need to know exactly about whether we're on the right track. Because what I'm afraid of, even myself, when you start questioning, some of the response might not come from the department. It will come among us. Because some of the process is there. Department indicated this process didn't start now, started some times ago in other forms. But I'll give it to you. Yes.
Can I assist the process, Chair? Because it is quite clear that the DA has got a submission for the purpose of this meeting. They are not here to come and listen to the presentation by the department. They have already formulated a position with regards to what we are receiving for the first time. Probably they have had the benefit of receiving the briefing before us. That is why they've got a committed position. Now, procedurally, one would expect then that this meeting to allow us an opportunity to engage with the department. And then after that, have our own session as a committee where we would look at whatever submissions that have been made, including our own submissions, be it as political parties, be it organs of civil society, and so forth. And at that point, can the DA then present their submission, which is this one? Unfortunately, we would already have the benefit of their submission in that meeting, and we would then engage with them on the basis of their submission. That is my intervention, Chair. That let them just hold it back a little bit, although we already have the gist of what their submission is, which is very good, Honorable Kronavat, because I already know now your thinking. So maybe in the next meeting, Chair, we can deal with this submission and then debate amongst ourselves and invite the department and say, look, as a committee, having considered all these other aspects, this is our position now as a committee. Thanks.
Okay. Baba Kronavat, the platform is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I hear, but only one thing is, we have not any documents beforehand from anyone. But, right. Chairperson, the metros and municipalities in any province before time. And I want to know from the department, how can you let this bill go through if there were not any participation from anyone at this stage? The Minister of Transport and Sunro, Mr. Martens, blatantly announced, and we talked about this in the beginning of this meeting, passing the bill in the NCOP, we're passing the bill in the NCOP within 2 months. He showed his disrespect for the NCOP as a House of Parliament. In fact, he is merely looking for a rubber stamp. Deputy Minister of Transport, Cindy Chikunga, said e-tolls will be implanted from July 2013. Sunrail arrogantly announced that they will implement the bill in 2 months' time. According to that, Section 195 and 217 of the Constitution, the Public Finance Management Act, the Money Bill Amendment Act, the Promotion of the Administrative Justice Act, South Africa must take all responsibility steps to promote the most effective, economic cost-effective, transparent, accountable, and competitive use of public funds. And that is a statement, if there is no public participation in this, how can we go on with this bill? I want to know, perhaps the select committee, and we want to ask this question to Sandra, what is the alternative road? What alternative road?
Point of order, Chair. The question is now put to Sandra.
Sorry, before you talk. Switch off your mic, Madam Member.
The question is put to Sandra. We are receiving a presentation from the Department of Transport, Chair. Honorable Groenewald is consistently out of order and you are allowing him to continue. I don't know why.
Okay, thank you. You see what, Honorable Members, I think Honorable Member Dao, you are quite correct. Not to say that, you know what I wanted to do. I wanted to leave him to talk because he's out of order. And to supplement that, you see what, ne? She mentioned other people which are not there, which are not part of the presentation, of which he talked about the public participation, of which he didn't consider the bill itself. This bill is not Section 76, it's Section 75. If you understand clearly what is Section 75. I've got that all come in my summary to explain what we have done as this committee, because we've done that already. Is there in the parliamentary website what you're talking about? So I wanted to leave him to talk, and then, as I indicated earlier on, that some of the respond won't come to the department. You just come to our side, because he might raise some of the things which are already there. Because I can quote a lot of things if you want me to respond on what you are asking in terms of our line function, that this is supposed to happen and this is supposed to happen.
A point of order. A point of order. Procedurally, in these processes, we normally engage the department. And it's the department who's going to defend themselves or clarify the issue of that. This does not belong to us. We are going to refer it. I can't understand what makes this engagement different from the normal engagements when a department comes and presents something. So I allowed members to raise issues. They let the department respond for themselves. Now it is. We are preempting what or defending the department. Who is present here? Because this is a normal process for me. I can't understand why we try to make this thing so complex.
You see what now? Honourable Members, what I will request, because Honourable Members are out of order, let's stick back to our business of the day. As we indicated that...
Chief, I can't be out of order.
Chief, I gave you an opportunity.
I said, I can't be out of order if I raised a point of order in this meeting.
I didn't notice you.
Although, but when
Chief,
you raise a point of order, I must be granted an opportunity to raise a point of order.
Okay, I will get the chance to speak. You'll get the chance to speak. Honourable Members, what I wanted to appeal today is not one more. If a person has not been noted and raised his voice, if you're not been noted, supposed to be, I'm still a chair here.
Yeah.
If you wanted, you must respect the chair. If you wanted to raise a point, raise your hand, you'll be given an opportunity to talk. Thank you. I think that Honorable Grunewald, you are done. You damn it, so that I can give other people. Because what I did, I've noticed the hand from the other side. I'm coming this way. You are done, isn't it? I will protect you, don't worry.
Yeah. Yes. Chairperson, I nearly by finished, but I just want to ask several questions to the department then. And then it's very short,
You see, Chief, as I already indicated, I shall protect you. Please don't start afresh.
No.
Stick to your question so that you give other people an opportunity. Thank you. You are finished. You are done.
You forced me to.
No, I didn't force you. Let's proceed. Next one. Honourable Member Feltman.
Thank you, Chair. I want to put it on record. This is an open discussion. And the department, Chair, I fully agree with Honourable De Beer. But firstly, I want to emphasize also that it is disrespect. I want to add my voice to it. Not even for the CEO of Central to be here. But I've got a few questions, Chairperson. If you go to page 12 of the presentation, the bill was also presented for inputs to the stakeholders committee of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. Comments were received from the following institutions. These institutions, this is not living bodies. The public, the people will pay the e-tolling, not institutions, not stakeholders. I don't see any mentioning about the citizens. Let me go back to page 8. Clause 3 also seeks to provide for the agency in cooperation with the municipalities. I mean, this bill was initially formed in Gauteng. I'm from Gauteng. And people in Gauteng doesn't know about it. The local people, I'm living in a township. People ask me, e-tolling. There was no proper public participation. Our constitution, our freedom charter says the people will govern. This is for the people. We're going to kill them. It's very sad to know a chairperson to read here that the traditional leaders, if I can say it bluntly, you know, in short, they are not recognized in this book. It's cross borders. Cross borders, most of our cross borders are going through rural areas. And it was federal and the department, there's no national roads in rural areas. I think we have to dig deeper, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honel, I've noted you, Mdwana.
Chairperson, for the record, on page 16, I want to start with the worst case scenario. On page 16, they are saying on second paragraph, therefore, the ineffective toll collection could result in this cost to be funded from the government resources in the future and therefore reducing government's ability to meet its desperate demand. Mm-hmm. I want to start with the worst case one. It actually says that if you don't have the ability to collect the revenue, the poor tax man must pay for your failure to be unable to collect the revenue. That is in your own words presented to us. How can you expect us, which are supposed to act in the interest of society, agree with your findings in your own research document? Can you explain that to me? I don't understand the language of it, referring your your worst case scenario back to those people who have nothing on the table. Chairperson, the ability for the cross border route agency to collect on behalf of you, which can't even deal with their own mandate. They were here in front of us. There is records proving that they don't have the capacity and the ability to run their own internal affairs. Now you want to put another burden on them of collecting your funds or taking over your responsibility or reducing your responsibility to their functions, where of course they are actually dead. I'm also saying, Chairperson, the issue of public participation is very much important. This is a very controversial thing in our country as it stands. There is big organizations which are saying, which discourage people not to buy the e-tolling cards. I don't know the cards or what is the system, because one of them who's not going to buy it. They said there is actually a national call coming from COSAC discouraging South Africans not to assist you with your e-tech. Which are saying that on the verge of the fact there is organizations which discourage, you are not going to see your revenue now. What do you have in place? Because clearly this is something which are enforced on society. The people of this country clearly raise its voice. They don't want this e-tolling. But it's clearly today it's come to be enforced. So bring in a piece of legislation to bypass other procedures here. You are taking us back to the old mentality. If they disagree, regulate them. This is the old mentality. It's not about participatory democracy here. It's about if you don't agree with us in the apartheid era, they just have to formulate a piece of legislation that they must comply. This is about compliance, Chairperson, nothing else. And on the issue, Chairperson, there was another page. I want to check, Chairperson, there is processes about the e-tolling which are still hanging in courts, which are still there. What happens about those processes? Because there are processes where people found themselves in the court resisting these things. Now we are bringing in a piece of legislation to regulate the processes of the e-tolling, bypassing those processes. And we are calling ourselves a people's government. We must listen to the people. But here, this piece of legislation is actually contradicting that. It's contradicting that in the form of the fact that people in the masses are saying we don't want this because it's going to pay us. We are going to pay it as the poorest citizens of the country. I'll come back to this in the second round.
Honourable Member Jacobs.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. As a whip of the committee, I want to call you to order. You chair this meeting according to procedures. If somebody raises a point of order, you allow him to raise a point of order. From there, it's either you accept it or you reject it, and then we can proceed. I think it's correct that you guide this meeting also. If you find there's something wrong, it is upon you to guide it, to say this is not correct and this is right. I was just trying to pep you, that you direct us in a good direction. Chair, I got a couple of questions here. The first one, it's an issue of tagging. Whether this should be a 75 bill or it will be a 76 bill, because it will clarify the issue of consultation. Because if it's 76 bill,
we know quite well that it should go to provinces. And now if it's 75 bill, there are ways in which you get public participation. So I think I want that clarity. The second one is the issue of tolling. Tolling, it was there. It is not coming for the first time. I just want us to get clarity between the tolling that was there and the e-tolling, which is here currently. So I think we want to get that clarity. And the other one, there were issues that were raised by the public because this has generated public interest. I'd like to know which were those issues that were raised by the public, and how did you address to those issues of the public? And the first one is the issue of a levy. There was this thing of a levy whereby they say a petrol levy must try to cover the cost of Italy. And then maybe you can give us your responses. Because if somebody comes with an alternative, it must be a viable and a sustainable alternative. It should not just address things for time being. So I would like to get that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member Temba. Honourable Member Mapisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to raise something here on amendment of Section 58 of Act 7 of 1998, subsection C. 1D. The last page. Yes. At the back of the act. Can I continue?
Ma, the platform is yours.
It does. Before the minister makes any regulation contemplated in subsection 1, the minister must submit a draft of the proposed regulation to Parliament for comment. And but then, I should think this saying for Parliament for comment, it doesn't augur well with me. It's too weak general. It doesn't even match the mask for the minister to submit. I should think the correct wording would be Parliament for consideration. Because if we just comment, it means you are brainstorming. I should think it should be a serious word, carrying more weight, like consideration. That's my input.
Thank you, Mama. The Lucia off. Honorable Mtwana Kazulu.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation from department. I want to check how many public participation was conducted in this bill from NA committee. If it's not, as our committee represents some provinces, we should be go back to the people to collect the views of the people for their input. Taxi industry, ordinary people using their motor cars, we should be conducting a public hearing to the provinces, especially in housing.
Honourable Member Tau. But before that, I wanted to caution the members as well. He's right to speak about the public participation more than 100%, but also we must consider the bill. What is the bill stand for? What is Section 75? And what is Section 76? Therefore, I want you to know that it must be on your back on your, of your mind that this bill is under Section 75. And then I saw a hand, but I wanted you to comment something. On, we are having a guest with us, Honourable Member Van Lingen from the DA. Yes, I've noted you, Honourable Member Dau. Yes. Rule 108 does allow that maybe we can have some officials, some members to come and visit us, but with limitations. You know those limitations. I won't open. Yes. And so that it must put, it must be clear that when we arrive at this stage, here you are limited. Yes, of course you are a member of NCOP, but you are not a member of this committee. But you are all more than welcome to be here. Before you talk, I wanted you to hear from Member Yao. His hand was up before. Sorry? Yes. I didn't get that one. Honourable Member Van Lingen.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for spelling out my rights. I understand them because I read them this morning. I would like to ask the department why there seems to be an anti-public participation issue on this bill, because it does affect the people on the ground. You have quite rightly said it is a Section 75 bill, but let me make it quite clear that the Protection of State Information Bill was also a Section 75 bill, and the NCOP for a whole term, the first term last year, did public participation and public hearings throughout South Africa, and especially in townships. We also know that the unions came out strongly there. And then, with the Intellectual Properties Bill, as presented, was set in terms of Section 72 of the Constitution, so the NCOP has to implement Section 72 when processing a bill. The precedent was set. So I think we must be very careful when we want to rush over, and we must carefully consider that we do not become the rubber stamped house here, and maybe the department can guide us why there's such an urge. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mama Temba.
Chairperson, is it... I'm not sure whether the Honourable Van Lingen doesn't trust the member who is being deployed to this committee, that he comes here and she comes here and, you know, sits on his behalf.
Okay. All right. I won't entertain that one. So I won't entertain that one. All right. Honourable members, let's come back to our business, please. Honourable Member Dau, I think he was going to be the last one from this side before I give it to the department to respond.
Oh, no, thank you very much. I won't make any comment with regard to what Honourable Temba said. But I must also make the point, Chair. You see, there's this impression sometimes that gets created, and I think it's a very wrong impression, that if you understand something, you are then seen to be talking on behalf of the department. It's absolutely incorrect. If I read something and I'm satisfied about something and I see something wrong, there's nothing that stops me from calling for a point of order. And I've got all my rights and I will exercise those rights. If a member is out of order, a member is out of order. He's not assisting us. The question then to the department beyond that comment is, one, should we as a committee reject the amendments of this bill or to the act? Let me put it this way. Should we, because at the end you are requesting us to endorse the bill, to approve the bill, not endorse. Okay, fine, it's the same thing in any case. Should we not approve it? What is going to happen? What's going to happen to the functionality of the department? That's point number one. Question number two. In terms of the objects of the bill, and I want to read from the original. I don't know if how many members do have a copy of the original. Not positions, it's not a position of the ANC. It is what the bill says. And I quote, I want to read from it. It says the bill seeks to provide more effectively for the collection of toll, to amend the Cross-Border Road Transport Act of 1998, Act number 4 of 1998, to amend the Road Transport Act of 1998. That's point number one. Two, to empower the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency to collect toll on behalf of SANRAL. To amend the SANRAL Act by inserting a definition to further provide for the differentiation in respect of the amount of toll that may be levied. Now, reading this, the question then becomes, what systems are then going to be put in place to ensure that you capacitate and strengthen the position of the road transport agency? To be able, because obviously, yes, it is true, we can't find that in the bill to say we are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But that the bill will then spell your intention. Now, this is now parliamentary processes of legislation. It will give us the intention, what you intend to do. But then, probably in your response, you might be able to give us a better understanding insofar as systems that we are going to put in place to ensure that the Transport Road Agency is capacitated to a point where it will be a much more and better positioned agency to do such work on behalf of SANRAL. It would be quite important for us to note that. And maybe also as an added question, because of your amending two pieces of legislation which attack Section 75, what implications would then, what harm would it then do to then take this legislation 76? You are amending 75. What harm would it then cause if it is 1076? Is it procedurally correct? Will it be legally correct? And if it is, then what would the implications be? If not, why would then why should we then insist on advancing an argument for the tailing of 76 when in actual fact you are amending 75 pieces of legislation? Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Before I give it to you, I wanted to make a follow-up on 102. I wanted to comment with one. I think it's on page 11, which says, a draft, in terms of consultation to all of us here, I think there was, as I indicated earlier on, that there was an advance which was done, not defending anybody, to say, a draft amendment bill was published in Gazette number 31715, of 19 December 2008. As I indicated, that distinct, not one more, distinct started long ago. And again, two draft bills providing for transport laws and related matters, which also included similar amendments to some of the amendment in the bill, were published in Gazette number 33027 and Gazette number 33028 on 15 March 2010. That was part of consultation. And then come to my question then. Advocate Masumbuga from the department, maybe to assist the members, I wanted to protect myself. This meeting is one. The meeting is one. Our house is very small. It's not like in a way it's big. And everybody, you do have a right to whisper, but if it's loud, it's no more to whisper, it's noise. maybe to clarify the members and to clarify us, what is the difference between a toll gate and e-toll? Maybe that's where there's a lot of hullabaloo. If you may clarify that. And then also in terms of the consultation, because another weakness from all levels. The thing was gazetted some times ago, 2008 and 2010. Maybe if you can take us on board, I'll pose this question as jokingly, that if the thing is gazetted, what is the responsibility of organization as well as individual? Because the thing was already gazetted 2008 and one 2010. And then also, I'll request the department to clarify us, because they talk about one single bill, that they were two draft bills, but they wanted to make one single bill, of which that was Section 75 and Section 76. For those who forgotten, Section 75 doesn't demand the provinces so much. That is a national competent. But for us, we've done just this because we also included Section 72 of the Constitution to make it clear for the submissions. Of which we've done it, I wanted to bring it back to my summary as well. Because that process already from our side, we have done it. If you check in a parliamentary website, because to us it's very easy to say 1, 2, 3 while we don't check even a parliamentary website. It was there some weeks ago. Therefore, I wanted you maybe to clarify us. And then also, purposely so that you can, I can open a new way for us to take us on board furthermore. The ownership, you spoke about the ownership. Sanral is the ownership in there, vice versa to the provinces. I want you to remember, everybody here also, that prior to 2010, when the country was very hip about the infrastructures, a lot of things have been done and everybody was happy. But the difference now is implementation. When we start to implement, that's where we are having problems now, after we were so happy. And then also, last one, the issue of collecting, if you might, may clarify us of the issue of collecting, because if my mind saves well, some people, they forgot, this document, Masakane document, it talks about how to collect levies, encouraging people. By then, it was an idea whereby everybody was engaged, provinces were engaged, even Western Cape was engaged. Every province was engaged. They commented about how to collect levies. I mean, I'm talking about generally, not specific for each ruling. And to us, here, in front of us, there is this jargon which is called how to collect levies for Sanral, whatever. If you may clarify so on that, so that you can be certified. I wanted to pose on that. Maybe I'll come later on. I'll pose it on that. No, I gave you a chance, ma'am, and let's give them a chance now. Well, no, we'll come to... Sorry. But I gave you chance to... Yes, I gave you chance to talk. Because if I allow that, every member will want to talk. Let's give to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We have noted your comments and the Honorable Members' comments. We've also noted them. We will engage on them as a team here. We'll take turns and engage them as a team, which I think is going to give more clarity as to why this bill should be a Section 75 and moving on and so forth and so forth. I think you're quite right, Chairperson, that in our presentation we did make an input
on the consultation processes that took place some time back in 2008. You did allude to that. We did also say so in our presentation, and that did, of course, take place. There were follow-up consultation, as you can see, in 2010, which also means that we are not anti public consultation, as it was alluded to by an honorable member. So we are for the public participation as a result of the gazetting and stuff like that. And the responsibility is to the people out there to make sure that those kind of discussion and documents are circulated for consumption and everybody has to engage. I therefore want to believe that we have done our best in terms of consultation. It's not something that is cropping up now in 2013. It's something that has been on the cards since 2008, and people have been, given an opportunity to engage on this consultation. I think, again, I will request my team, my legal team, to look into the issues of what will happen if this bill gets rejected. And then we will engage on that and look into the pros and cons of having that. And also we need to clarify what exactly do we mean by tolling and e-tolling, and what are the benefits in terms of reducing congestion, productivity issues, in terms of economic spin-offs and stuff like that. I think we'll get into that. I'll ask my colleague from Sunrail and also Prasad to give us some input on those kind of things. I think the crux of the matter is what are the objectives of these amendments, which is very, very positive and objective enough. And the empowerment of the cross-border, of course, you will never, ever set somebody else to fail. We will touch on the systems as to what we're going to do in terms of beefing up the law enforcement units, which are already happening with RTMC, in order to assist, the cross-border kind of engagement insofar as the collection of these fees are concerned. We'll then take turns and engage on these issues in more clarity, so that I will leave it to my legal team to take us through, the implications for the bill moving forward. I will ask Mazombuga to take us through that, and then I will ask Sunrail to take us through what is the difference between the e-toll and the tolling, because I think that we mustn't treat them as if they are the same. I think we must separate them so that we are all on the same wavelength in terms of that. Maybe I can ask with the legal team to take us through that and some other issues that have been raised. But critically speaking, I think those are the ones that will drive us and make us drive forward and move forward with the deal. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've already stated in the background that this bill has been drafted as a single bill initially. And as a single bill, meaning that it contains issues that relate to Section 75 and issues that relate to Section 76. And through our discussion with the State Law Advisor's Office, we were advised that we need to separate the issues because we'll be creating a mixed bill. And we split the bill into two, the Section 75 bill and the 76 bill. The one that is before you is Section 75 bill, which contains issues that pertain to Section 75. The substantial issues pertaining to Section 76 bill is not before this House. That is the starting point. I would like us to allow the State Law Advisor to explain to the committee as to how do we go about tagging, because I think then once that is illustrated, then we'll start to understand this issue that crops us mainly on public participation. Because we did receive an opinion from them. It was a subject matter of debate also in the other House, and our parliamentary legal officer and the department and the state advisor, we came to a conclusion or an agreement that this bill before the House is a Section 75 bill. Then we'll entertain other issues of public consultation, and the objects of this particular bill will engage on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and we certified this bill to be a Section 75 bill. And when the bill gets to Parliament, it's referred to the Joint Tagging Committee, and the Parliamentary Law Advisor, Advocate Gary Roder, sitting on my right, was also in agreement that the bill is in fact the 75 bill. Maybe if I can just briefly explain to the committee about the 75 bill, and then Advocate Roder will go through the process as to what the role of the NCOP is in respect of the 75 bill. Okay? Basically, when we look at the bill, when we look at the bill, the Constitution, the Constitution prescribes how a bill should be tagged. And when we tag a piece of legislation, we look at the schedules to the bill. We look at Schedule 4 and Schedule 5. And in each schedule, there's listed items of the subject matters of the bill. And initially, when we had the new constitution, when we did tagging, when we applied the system of tagging, we adopted the Canadian approach, which was the pith and substance. We looked at the pith and substance of the bill, and if it dealt with a matter which fell within one of those listed schedules, it would be tagged that way. But then in 2010, the Constitutional Court decided in a matter of Tongan and others versus the Minister for Agriculture and Land Affairs and others. I'm sure you all know about that matter which dealt with the Communal Land Rights Act, where the Constitutional Court struck the bill down as unconstitutional because of the tagging, you know, the tagging, and the tagging affects the public participation process. And in that judgment, you know, we're a new democracy and we're developing our jurisprudence on tagging. And in that judgment, the court said, hold on, we need to look at the substantial measure test. And since 2010, we've adopted a substantial measure test when it comes to tagging. When we look at the substantial measure test, we look at the listed items in the Schedule 4 and 5 to the Constitution. And then when we look at those items, we don't see, for example, if we see something of, say, agriculture, and we see the word agriculture in the bill, and we say, okay, it's a 76 bill because it falls within that item, that listed item. We considered each provision of this bill, each amendment, and we applied a substantial measure test. We looked at, does this provision in a substantial measure relate to any of the items listed in the schedule to the Constitution? So we did that manually with each amendment, with each clause. We looked at the substantial measure, and we found that there was none of the items listed in Schedule 4 or 5 to the Constitution which dealt with any of the provisions which these amendments relate to. And therefore, the Constitution says that if a matter doesn't deal with a matter which is listed in the schedules of the Constitution, it deals with any other matter. And any other matter is dealt with in accordance of Section 75 to the Constitution. And for that reason, we tag the bill with 75. The Constitution prescribes a process. So it's not a process which we have latitude or discretion or public opinion as to how it goes. The Constitution prescribes that. So what we do, we apply the Constitution as well as Constitutional Court judgments, and we see the thinking of the Constitutional Court. And in applying that, we found that this bill we sufficiently believe that the bill is a Section 75 bill, and therefore we tagged it a 75 bill. And then also with regard to the one honourable member raised a concern with regard to the bill not being transferred to the House of referred to the House of Traditional Leaders for input. Usually it provides that if a matter relates to traditions, customs, or anything which falls within the mandate of that House, a bill gets referred to them. The bill needs to be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders, and there was nothing in these proposed amendments which fell within that, and therefore we've also advised, we were also of the view, we expressed an opinion that it's not necessary to refer this bill to the House of Traditional Leaders. My colleague will briefly explain to the committee the process with regard to what happens with the Section 75 bill, and also what happens should the committee decide to reject or accept all the proposed amendments. I'll hand over to my colleague, Advocate Roder. Thank you.
Good morning, members.
Good morning, Chairman. I agree with my colleague here from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor with regard to the tagging of the bill. There's also just one more thing that I would like to add in terms of the rules is that the parliamentary legal advisor merely advises the joint tagging mechanism, which consists of the chairperson of the NCOP, the speaker, the deputy speaker, and also the permanent deputy chairperson of the NCOP. So what happens is we merely advise, and the joint tagging mechanism that makes a decision with regard to which, if it's a Section 75 and Section 76 bill. In this case, the statutory advisor then submits an opinion or a recommendation to Parliament, which then will go to the joint tagging mechanism. In my advice to the joint tagging mechanism, I completely agreed with the state law advice that it is a Section 75 bill based on the reasons that she has provided. The rules also then provide that a political party can also then make submissions to the joint tagging mechanism with regard to whether the bill, in their opinion, is either a Section 76 or a Section 75 bill, and only one of those opinions was received, which is the reason for my subsequent opinion on the tagging of the bill. In that subsequent opinion, based on the advice of the political party member, I agreed again with the state law advice that it is indeed a Section 75 bill based, again, on the reasons that she gave. So the role of the legal advisors then in the tagging of the bill is merely to advise the joint tagging mechanism. The joint tagging mechanism then makes a decision based on that advice and obviously also their own legal advisors. So that's the first part. The second part is, with regard to public participation, this has been a very big issue that has come out from the members. One of the things that I would like to state is that the constitutional responsibility to facilitate public participation is here in the NCOP and in the NA. So we're the primary public participation sort of office bearers. We have to facilitate public participation first of all. Given that we are the public representatives. Secondly, in terms of Section 75, given that it is a Section 75 bill, or it has been tagged Section 75 bill by the joint tagging mechanism, that doesn't preclude this committee from facilitating public participation and going out of the necessary provinces if it deems so. So just because it is a Section 75 bill doesn't stop that process from happening. Section 75, one of the Constitution says that the council must, there are three options when it comes to Section 75 bill. It can pass the bill subject to amendments posed by it, which means that the council can still make recommendations on proposed amendments to the bill. Thus, the powers are taken away. The question then arises from one of the members, what happens if the bill is then rejected by the National Council of Provinces? The answer is very blunt and very plain, nothing. The National Assembly can say, you know, can consider those recommendations, but can either adopt or reject the bill. So it is up to the, and that's where Section 75 power comes in, is that the National Assembly is not, doesn't have to take into consideration the recommendations made by the National Council of Provinces. So, but that still doesn't mean that this committee doesn't need to facilitate public participation or doesn't have the power to, because it still can make recommendations on possible amendments to the bill. So it can do that in any way. The Constitution and constitutional jurisprudence has said that that Parliament can be very innovative when it comes to public participation. It can, various things it can do. So, yeah, that, in terms of participation, that is basically what the committee's powers are. And we shouldn't be up to that call. There's almost a shift to abdicate the responsibility to facilitate public participation onto the department as opposed to just Parliament. We're the public representatives. So not me, but the members of the and therefore they, you know, should facilitate public participation.
Department, are you done?
Thanks, Chairperson. That was only on clarifying the tagging and the issue of public participation. My colleagues will continue to answer other questions which were not part of what has been answered currently. Mr. Alex.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the questions from the top and run through them. I think the issue of public participation was discussed, but I think there are two public participations referred to here. The one was at the time of toll declaration back in 2007. That was a whole process involving presentations to the councils, working committee involving the councils, the province, national, and then go through to cabinets, and then it went to the declaration process where public comments were seek. It was advertised widely. So that was the one public participation process, one that was challenged in the review application. There's reference to the court case, and the review was actually favorable in terms of SANROC and government. The second public participation process is the one related to this bill, and there was reference to the previous consultations in terms of the advertising of the bill. I think the one thing that wasn't mentioned was the public consultation process that was followed by the portfolio committee, where it was also advertised publicly, and comments were received and presentations were made to the portfolio committee. The issue of the CBRTA, I need to give a little bit of history. This issue actually came along not as a result of e-tolling. It came along as a result of not the equal application of cross-border fees for vehicles entering and exiting the country, where vehicles in South Africa are paying much higher fees when exiting the country, and foreign vehicles entering the country are not paying the same fees because we've got toll roads. And then vehicles are entering the country and they're not traveling on the toll roads, and they travel on alternative route networks and causing damage on those road networks. So at that stage, that was a number of years ago, we started off with a project at Musina where a whole facility was constructed to assist the CBRTA to do the vehicle inspections, and then if there's any prepaid toll to be levied. This thing then also relates to international vehicles leaving the country, and we've got an agency that's geared at cross-border to ensure that vehicles leaving the country can ensure that their tolls are paid. So it is actually making use of existing agency and empowering them, and it will definitely not be done without providing them the required systems to assist with it.
What I'll request, use your mic or come closer to the mic, please.
Okay. All right. Just a clarification that I must just say that SANROL didn't say that it will happen. It says that it respects parliamentary process, but to give the public an indication to get ready that it's envisaged in 2 months. In terms of the difference between e-tolling and normal tolling, the SANROL Act always provided for toll roads to be declared and the process in which toll roads must be declared. E-tolling was envisaged in our initial act, and it made provision for electronic toll collection. But as technology evolves, there are more possibilities related to e-tolling, which at the time of our initial act wasn't referred to in that act. And that is specifically when we talk about open road tolling. We already use tags, e-tags, at Bakwena Toll Plaza since 2002. So the technology in itself is not new. But to use tolling in an open road environment where there's not a physical boom, where somebody is stopping and needs to pay toll, that we haven't implemented before, and that is what has been implemented in terms of the system in Gauteng. When we evaluated the options for the toll system implementation, it was evaluated to take a look at conventional toll plazas. But if you look at the environmental impact of having so many vehicles need to stop and pull away, firstly. Secondly, the time it will take and the delays will cause, which will nullify the objective, namely to improve vehicle flow in the province, and we had severe congestion in Gauteng, then the technology enabled us to do it in an open road environment, and as a result of that, this bill was required to further clarify e-tolling and the enforcement on e-tolling. So I just want to make it maybe just a bit clear that the bill is not about the ability of SANRAL to declare toll roads. That ability existed in existing legislation. This bill is just to assist with open road tolling as a mechanism to identify vehicles and collect toll. In terms of the issue of alternative ways in which funding can take place, I think first to state that there is an existing fuel levy. I think the figures are available in terms of the money that's collected, and that gets redistributed to the metropolitan councils, the municipalities, the provinces, and SANRAL. That already outweighs the number of the amount of money that's collected. Issues with the fuel levy is that if you talk about very big projects like the Gauteng project, it will mean cross-subsidization from other provinces to implement a project like that, meaning that people that is not making use of that type of infrastructure at all, or other sectors like farming industry and so on, everybody's affected by a fuel levy. A fuel levy has really a very big impact because it affects every piece of every kilometer traveled anyway is affected by that. In that regard, we went through an extensive exercise with the Road Freight Association to determine what would be best for them. And they came to the conclusion that at the fuel levy as low as 13.13 cents per litre, that it would cost their industry 400 million rand per year more than the tolling in Gauteng. So also for fuel levy is that then every project that you implement, you add more and more and more. This is the first phase of GFIP. There are other projects that are earmarked for future implementation, expansions on existing toll roads and so on. So if every time you need to now go back and you increase on fuel levy, and fuel levies internationally, and I'll use the USA as a very good example, and it's a very good report on that, is declining. In the USA, they received out of fuel levies sufficient money to maintain their network. But since then, and they estimate by 2018, they will receive basically a third per vehicle out of a fuel levy because vehicles became much more efficient. At that stage, they had on average 5.7 kilometers per liter. Now they're looking at an average in the foreseeable future of in order of 16 to 17 kilometers per liter, and that's why they say basically they have a third of the revenue. Secondly, green energy is promoted, electrical vehicles or hybrid vehicles is promoted, and which doesn't make the fuel levy sustainable in the long run. I think what is important in terms of funding resources is that it's maybe not a single funding resource. I don't think there's in principle anything wrong with the current fuel levy, but it is not enough to get all the infrastructure that's implemented. Just another just interesting stat is that since 1990 till now, the number of vehicles in South Africa doubled. The number of vehicle kilometers traveled on our road networks increased with 40 billion vehicle kilometers per year. So the maintenance needs are much higher than it was previously. It's the need for road capacity is immense. And despite all efforts of integrated systems like implementing Gautrain, implementing bus rapid transport, we still experience a massive growth in vehicles. And so much so that since we've upgraded the freeway network in Gauteng, we call it the latent demand that's sitting on that network. We saw increases on some of the routes like the N1 of 40% of vehicles since 2006 till now. There are very extensive literature about fuel levies and alternative funding sources on this, but this is to highlight just the essence of it. I think I've referred to the public participation by the Portfolio Committee and also presentations that were made to the Portfolio Committee, and that included also members of the public that made submissions. It was not only organizations. issue mentioned about alternative routes, just to clarify that the Act doesn't require alternative routes to be provided. I think I also just want to make the point that in a city region like Gauteng, this network consists of 200 kilometers out of I think about 10,000 kilometers of roads. So it's a very small portion, a very important portion, but a small portion of the network that is told. And even if it's told, there's a number of trips that doesn't go through the gantry. In terms of what has been done up till now, there was a steering committee. That steering committee also contained all the background about the previous consultations. It was then a new consultation process. Following the steering committee, there were reductions in the toll tariffs due to refinancing issues and so on. Another process followed where there was a fiscal contribution of 5.7 billion rand, and the toll tariffs as it's now is in real terms about half than what it was in 2007 when the project was announced. Furthermore, in order to assist those that does a lot of traveling, there were caps introduced, 550 rand for light vehicles, and I think 1,750 and 3,500 rand per month on Class B and C vehicles. The other discount that has been implemented is a discount for the time of day of traveling, and providing quite substantial discounts in off-peak periods. And this is one of the other advantages of tolling, is that you can use it as a travel demand management tool to obtain certain vehicles to travel outside peak hours, like heavy vehicles, which we don't want right inside the peak hours, because it affects and contributes to congestion, and then you make it very attractive for them. That is one option. And then also it contains, in a sense, urban sprawl. It promotes the use of public transport, and it also provided the ability to exempt public transport vehicles, including buses and taxis, where those vehicles do transportation for people in lower income groups. However, it's not just aimed, it's aimed at the principle of public transport, so anyone can obtain that benefit. With respect to the cost of collection, there's been various submissions made also in the court papers to explain cost of collection. And cost of collection can be, it works in the sense that there are compliant transactions where it's about, with the reduced tariffs, that figure increased because the cost stays constant, but the revenue decreased, but it works out on 17.17% on compliant toll transactions. And then non-compliant toll transactions are is basically covering themselves in terms of any additional cost related to that that is referred back to the user, so that compliant users are not subsidizing non-compliant users in terms of the tariff. Okay.
Thanks, Jefferson.
Are you done? Okay. Honourable members, what I would suggest therefore is to give you an opportunity for a second round and also to do follow-ups if you do have follow-ups. Baba Jacobs, followed by Honourable Member O'Neill. Who else? Okay. Followed by Honourable Member Groenewald. Who else? Sorry? Okay, let me give this, I'll come to you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I did not get this clarity between tolling and e-tolling. Maybe let me just say. You have said tolling was there before e-tolling. It was there for some time. And now you are introducing this e-tolling, which means you are not paying as you were doing in toll gates, where you stop, pay with money or with a card. I'm trying to make a point here. With e-tolling, it means you buy a tag, you use a road, you get an account that you are going to pay so much. That's what I want to establish, so that it must be clear, because there is this thing that we can't differentiate between tolling and e-tolling, because it seems as if tolling was there for some time, and now this e-tolling is derived from this e-tolling, from tolling. The other one, from the state law advisor, which I did not hear very clear, you said as a committee we may go for public participation. Is it forced, or we may do it? Because we have said this is Section 75 bill, and then if it's a 75 bill, it's not like a 76 bill where we'll go for provinces, but you say we may go for public participation. But what we did as a committee, we put this on a website so that people should comment. I think that also is a public participation. So, no, I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you.
Wait, Chief. Honourable members, we're not in the classroom, we're not kids. Once you start, when they do unto you, Nina, some of you are so sensitive, it's easy to cry. So leave him to finish as I protected you. Because I know that you are so sensitive, easy to cry. Go on, your protected, sir.
Yeah, Chair, I just want to understand that what kind of a public participation is that? Is it not the one that we have done, or we have to do something else? Because to me, I regard what we have done, it is also public participation. Because if you put that in the website, you are inviting people for comments for people, so that you should consider those comments. And then by that, it's a public participation. So that's why I'm saying I need clarity from them. And also, if he can quote also in the Act where he has derived his interpretation of that. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member O'Neill.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think my first question which I posed to the Department, they didn't respond on it. My first question. But for a follow-up is the fact that I agree with Honourable Jacobs. The red line is so fine, you won't be able to see the differences. Now, I want to make a practical example. You know, in Lambertville, there is a toll gate. On the N1, when you go out of Cape Town, there's a toll gate. And there is a toll gate between Johannesburg, there's toll gates between Johannesburg and Pretoria. What is the difference? Because all of them are paying a fee when you pass through it. In terms of your own experience, I'm saying the red line is so fine, I can't pick up the difference. For me, on my ear, it's you need to pay, bottom line. The one which I didn't understand the explanation of the cross-border one. Because it says that when you exit, you have to pay. You want to monitor the payment of them, and those who came in the country which don't have toll gates needs to pay. They're paying on our toll gate, and they are opting to use alternative routes. So are you putting a penalty to them because of they using the alternative routes? Is that what you're trying to say? Because in South Africa, it's when you don't want to pay, if you go out of Cape Town, you pass the mountain, which means then you don't need to pay at the toll gate out, at the whole toll gate. Thank you.
You know, colleagues, let me open for Ubaba and then I'll come. I wanted to clarify something for us as well. That please let us not run out of the meeting on what was presented to us. Honourable member, the platform is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be short this time. The main thing here is what I want to know is the alternative routes. You talk about alternative routes, and there's a lot of e-tolling coming up now all over South Africa, it seems to me like that. And I want to know, is there alternative routes for all these e-toll routes that is coming up now? I also want to know, what will the social-economic impact of the e-toll routes on the communities, especially on our poor communities, and job creation and all and that thing. Some people are living and staying on this side of a metro, and their work is on the other side. What impact will it have at the end of the day? And then I also want to know, what is the financial impact of e-toll roads and on the capital investment, the administration, road maintenance, and then there will be a profit at the end of the day. And who is benefit out of these projects? And how many, if percentage, how many money is getting out of the country to Austria who is supporting this project? I thank you.
Who will be the next one? Yes, Honourable Member Van Lingen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Something we haven't touched on is, perhaps somebody can answer, what effect will the exclusion of the Act, the SANRAL Act, have on the National Credit Act and one's private financial facilities that you have? I also need to know whether the technology that is being used here is the most cost-effective one, because technology has changed and it is not necessarily, this particular one is not, why is it considered the best or the only option? And then I'm very concerned about the public participation, Chairperson, because with the Intellectual Properties Bill, I want to say again, a precedent was set in terms of Section 72. And when we listen to the State Law Advisor, we must have public participation. And the plea would be for the NCOP to seriously consider public participation in the provinces and especially the metros where the e-tolling or the toll roads will take place. So I beg with you and the committee to consider something like that. I also wish to say that, you know, we talk about the road infrastructure and we were given some very good stats by SANRAL, but and the vehicles that have doubled since 1990 to 2013, which is true, but the rail system collapsed, and if the rail system collapsed, the roads will not last. So we must cure the cause of the problem and then address what we have to address. At the moment, it's very difficult. We have to do both, but the rail system must be rejuvenated and get going again to take the heavy-duty vehicles off the road. Thank you.
Okay. Before I... All right, let me open foot. I want to remember Dow, because I wanted to comment something to put this thing straight in terms of our constitution. Maybe when we read our constitution, we read it upside down. Let me remember Dow. Talk, please. Come on.
I hope, Chair, I'm not reading it upside down. No, let me just tease Honorable Groenewald with one issue. You know, in 2009, when we came, after we were sworn in and so forth, there was this buzzword by the Democratic Alliance of equal opportunities for all. And
I remember raising an issue even in the House that how do you then explain equal opportunities for all in a highly equal and highly divided society? And the TA was quite firm in this in equal opportunity for all. Now, today, thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald, has realized that the level of inequality in our society is extremely high. And therefore, something needs to be done in ensuring that we close the gap of inequality, unemployment, and poverty. Thank you very much, my brother. We'll go a very long way, me and you. The issue here with regard to the department is, I don't stay in Gauteng. I don't stay in Gauteng, but it does not mean that I may not have an interest to go to Kruger National Park with my kids or whatsoever at one point or so. And I drive through that road, whether it be Gauteng, is it M1 or N1. I drive through, it's an open, open trolley. I drive. I come back, I go back home with my kids, and I refuse to pay because the bill is very clear in so far as its relationship with the credit what?
Okay.
Yeah. But I refuse to pay. What then? Would SANRAL take me to court, or what mechanisms would then be put in place to force payment? And if I still refuse to do that, are you going to wait for me until I run into a roadblock next time I want to go to Mpumalanga again in Gauteng or whatsoever and arrest me for an outstanding fine or whatsoever? I think it would be important for us to be clarified. With regard to the issue of public participation, I wouldn't really want to put that matter to the department, but rather I would suggest that the committee needs to make a reflection on that, and not the department to respond to that question, because it is our responsibility. We must then determine whether if we are going to deal with the bill in the following way or not. And that would obviously be informed of my previous experience, because it was not a department telling us what to do, but it was a committee that decided on what to do. We do have a model that Parliament has adopted, a public participation model. Members were introduced to the model, comments were received to the model, and forms of public participation are then clearly captured in that model. Whether it be public, in-house participation, where a committee invites people to come and make submissions to the committee, it may be oral, it may be written. That is public participation. It may be outreach, an outreach program, where you go out and visit communities, call public meetings or whatsoever. That is public participation. You may have GCIS here as an institution, or we may use the instruments of GCIS, where we may call on our people to call in and tell us what they are saying, free of charge. That is public participation. So part of public participation is not a one straight jacket, you know, something that has been modeled. There are many forms of public participation, and I would encourage ourselves to familiarize ourselves with that document. It is a parliamentary document that outlines and explains what thank you very much. The honourable members got a copy of that. Exactly. So I'm speaking to the copy that she has in front of her, and the issues that I'm raising are there. So, Chair, I'm trying to raise this thing that we shouldn't find ourselves trapped in if we don't go to provinces, therefore there was no public participation. We may even, in our next meeting, invite key institutions or organizations that we think are quite central, and even pay for them to come to Parliament, if possible, for an in-house discussion. That is public participation, you know. So it depends on what is it that we want to do as a committee, and not for the department to tell us what to do in so far as public participation is concerned. But those are matters, Chair, that probably might come at the end if we had excused the department, thank them or whatsoever, and then whether if we sit here and further discuss as a committee or we reschedule to meet next week or whatsoever and have our discussion and proceed on how then we deal with the matter until we invite the department again and say, look, we are agreed on this, we do not agree here, we agree here, and so forth and so forth. Thank you very much.
You see, thank you very much, members. Before, and please, this time when I allow the department to respond, there's no round number three. But I wanted to clarify, to take you on board on this now. I'm happy because members, most of the time when they argue, not always, like in this matter in particular, they don't check even their constitution, what does it say? Because the issue, when we raise about the issue of the public participation, Owabo Jacob responded to that thing long ago. Long ago. And everybody was humming, like bees. I will clarify something. We talk about Section 75 of the Constitution. We don't talk about Section 72. While, Chief Emma, please, the time you talk, we were quiet. I'll appeal to members that they must check their Constitution and what is there in front of us. And the Honourable Member Dao was correct to say that the thing is with us. Like, if you check, if anybody bring the argument of Section 72, Section, we've done that. In terms of Section 72, 1B, Roman Figure 1, we've done that. To regulate, I want you to read it as it is, to regulate public access, including access of the media to the council and its committee. With that one, that's what we were saying, that already we've done that for submissions. We've done that for some. So what else? That's why Honourable Member Dow said we mustn't be rigid to some of our class. No, we are going to this. We've done that. We're covered. And then today is our, the department, you see, we must teach ourselves maybe to have a way when dealing our men to understand the sections which we're dealing about. And then if we understand the situation, because if you go to section, 75, it talks about ordinary bills not affecting provinces. I'll repeat again. If we recognize the constitution of this country as our guiding document to our affairs, it says, in bold black, it says ordinary bills not affecting provinces. And then you go to section 76, that ordinary bills affecting provinces. So I'm trying to say, to illustrate that we are on the right track. It is not compulsory for us to go to the provinces, no matter this matter is in the national competence. But we've done justice because we used Section 76, as I indicated, Roman Figure 1, of which we've done that. That's open. Open to anybody. You can be, I'm from the rural area. I'm happy to understand that some people are so vocal with us in from the rural, more than us in the rural areas. I'm from the rural area. It is open to any person. And it is open to any party.
Point of order.
It's a point of order.
Yes, please.
You want to be careful not to be out of order.
Yeah.
Then.
Yes.
Chairperson, you're giving us a lecture.
Absolutely.
Your public participation is what is there. I fully agree what Honorable Tau says and what you are saying. It is not the main thing for public participation is the effectiveness of it.
Sorry, before you continue.
Chairperson, you want to tell us where to go to.
Listen, you said I was saying, please don't be out of order as well, because you said we are out of order, but you agree with what I've said, with Tau said. So why is repetition? Okay, I'll continue. Okay, fine. It's from your mouth. It's recorded.
Chairperson, the effectiveness of public participation.
Chief, I was just... You see, there is this thing which I wanted to correct to some of the people. When it suits them, they want to use the Constitution. When it doesn't suit them, they don't want to use the Constitution. When I'm dealing with the matters which are there in the Constitution, somebody is bringing an argument. I don't think that is true. It falls back to us. As I indicated, that we are on the right track, we are dealing with Section 75 of the Constitution. And I will request, there's no third round. I said first round and second round. Last, I will request the department to respond on some of the questions which were not clear, which were not clarified. Thank you. Over to you, department.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the issue, we will go also to the issue of the difference between the two processes, that is the e-toll and the tolling. I think we need to spend more time on that. And then I think, Chairperson, on the issue of the public pursuit, I think you have dealt with that very well. I think we won't be going back to that one. And the issue of alternative routes, we will touch on that one in terms of the new act, in terms of the Central Act, whether there's still a requirement of that or not. I think we need to go back to that one as well. I would like to talk about the social economic impact, like it was raised, in terms of the tolling and the local activities there. I think we need to look at that. I think basically the National Credit Act, Chairperson, it has been covered in our presence, but we don't have a problem repeating it in terms of that, to see how that is going to be affecting everybody else, and implication in, if you don't pay, what then happens, because there's no stick, there's only this kind of it. I think that is what we're going to be looking at. Maybe, Chairperson, I just wanted to make a comment on the road to rail, as it was alluded to by the honourable member, in saying that why can't we look into the rail system and and move cargo, whatever it is, onto the rail system. I think we must always bear in mind that the rail infrastructure, although we are deviating to the call for today, I just wanted to make a call that our rail stock, as we speak, by Prasa, is more than 40 years old. That is why we have injected so much money to rehabilitate it to where it should be. So I think that is a process that is already there, which we need to look at it very vigorously. But for the purposes of this discussion here and this meeting, I think we just have to highlight a few things as indicated here. I know that there was a question that we couldn't respond to, according to an oral member. I'm not too sure which one it was, but I think we did respond to all the questions in the first round of discussion. Not unless we are reminded of that one, we will attend to it as well. Thank you very much. I will ask my colleague, particularly Sandra, to talk to this issue, whether it pertains to the agency itself. Maybe our legal team can also act wherever we can so that we can wrap up nicely, and then thank you very much.
Okay, over to you, Sandra.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've tried to make it very brief in the first round, but I'll spend more time to exactly explain e-tolling and how it works and if you're not paying. The concept of tolling, in terms of our act, remains exactly the same. You pay a user charge to make use of a specific stretch of road, and the tariff is determined for that specific stretch of road, and when you pass that point, where in the past you would have had a toll plaza and you stopped, now you're traveling underneath a gantry.
and the toll transaction is then recorded electronically, as where it is with a normal plaza, determined when you stop, you are classified if you're a light vehicle or a heavy vehicle, and you pay the specific tariff right there and then. So e-tolling is simply a more advanced technological advanced mechanism to collect toll, and it's done because it's not practical in very high volume routes, and that's international, the way it goes internationally, to do away. They've constructed, I've seen toll plazas with 40 toll lanes on high volume roads to handle that traffic, and it doesn't make sense if you now have technology available where you can simply travel underneath, you don't need to slow down and so on. The way e-tolling works, and the easiest way to explain it, is very similar to cell phone prepaid. With cell phone prepaid, you've got air time. With e-tolling, you've got travel time or an amount in an account. So you set up an account once. That account, the system that is implemented, can be used at any other toll plaza. If you go through that toll plaza and you've got an e-tap, you're rolling out the technology at other toll plazas as well. Not as free flow, but you drive into a dedicated lane, it reads the tag and it opens up for you. So the technology is used at other existing toll plazas. I just want to emphasize the point. You're not taking away the toll plaza. It's just at the moment you can stop there and pay manual or give your credit card. It's just when you drive in there, it can read your tag and it will also open the boom if there's money in your account. So that is the way that e-tolling is different. And as I've said, we've been doing e-tolling for 11 years already in Gauteng at the Bakuina toll roads. And this is just to take it a step further where it's free flow tolling, where you don't need to stop. The principle of tolling stays exactly the same. It's just a mechanism of paying. the enforcement, if you're the liability to pay a toll remains as any other toll plaza, that any person making use of that facility must pay their toll. So there are options available. You can register online. You just go on a website. It literally takes you 10 to 15 minutes to register an account. You can phone into a call center and register an account, or you can make contact and buy a day pass, which you obtain a day pass for 50 rand, and you can travel all the roads in Gauteng as much as you like for a 24-hour period. And there are also day passes for every vehicle. So there are options available if you're not local. But as I've said, that same tag that you will be able to use here at the Huguenot Tunnel to go through that toll gate. So it makes sense to set up an account once. It's not a big effort to set up an account. But in the event that you don't do this and you've traveled the roads, you have a 7-day grace period. There are signs at every exit point indicating a number you can call. There are centers located next to the road where you can pull off and go to a center to obtain over-the counter help. But if you still don't pay or refuse to pay, you would be invoiced after about 21 days after the toll transaction. So we're waiting for payment, and if we don't get payment, we roll up all the transactions that has taken place over a 14-day period, and you get invoiced for that. If you're not making payment in terms of that invoice, then obviously further legal processes in terms of the Criminal Procedures Act will take place. If you do make payment, you can make payment if you make payment within 30 days of receiving the invoice, and you then register, you pay the same tariff as was the tariff at the time when you went through the gantry, or the so-called DLN tariff. So there's all opportunity for people, if they're not compliant at the time when they travel, to also become compliant afterwards. The CTA process is a standard process where you inform users about outstanding tolls, and then you go through the process that a summons is issued at some time, and it goes through the whole Criminal Procedures Act, as is already contained in our Act. Moving on to
cross-border issue. I'll explain it in more detail. What is happening at the moment when South African registered vehicles are leaving the country and they go at any of Zimbabwe or Mozambique or Namibia or Botswana, they pay cross-border levies, extensive cross-border levies. What's happening in terms of vehicles entering South Africa, foreign vehicles, when they are entering the country, South Africa is not charging cross-border levies. And there was this view, and I don't know if it's a SADC view, but that in South Africa there are toll roads, so these vehicles will pay as they use the roads. So what's happening with South African vehicles, they travel the toll roads or alternative routes, it's up to them. But when they're exiting the countries, they pay these very expensive cross-border levies, literally thousands of rand to enter another country. The industry in South Africa then approached the CDRTA and said that the playing field is not level. They cannot compete with their international counterparts. And then the view was expressed that we must be able, when foreign vehicles are entering South Africa, to ensure that at least they pay the amount due for making use of our road network, that they pay up front. So they enter, they have a letter, a permit. The permit describes the route that they must use. And then according to that permit, they get charged the toll in advance. So CBRTA then went to SANRAL and asked them, can we do this on behalf of SANRAL? I can just state that what these foreign vehicles are doing, and we've done investigations for foreign companies, is that they will get fake toll slips to go and present back to their employers. For one company, it amounted many years ago 40,000 rand a month. That is the sort of industry that's in it. So the company is losing the money, and they don't know where it's actually going, although they want their vehicle to travel on the toll road. So that's where it originated from. And in that regard, we already constructed a joint facility at Messina, where we do inspection of the vehicle, overloading control of the vehicle, checking of the cross-border permits, and then the fourth thing would have been the prepayment of toll. And because CBRTA is fulfilling these other functions, it makes sense that we don't need to go and to get an outsider to do that. Then later on, the e-tolling followed, and although it's a very low percentage of international vehicles that's detected on the system, we still believe it should be fair that that they are not registered on our e-NATO system and that there should be a way to do enforcement on them. And therefore, when they're leaving the country, we would like to develop a system where cross-border, once again, when checking the permits and checking the vehicles, function they do already, they also check for outstanding toll. The alternative roads issue, as I've stated, is that it's not a requirement in terms of our Act. It's always coming up, and it also came up in the submission that Salga made. When we went through the very extensive traffic modeling, and I don't think this principle is actually that complex. If you look at traffic growth in a city region, and you say, okay, the freeway network has now three lanes in each direction, so it can carry, let's say, 100,000 vehicles a day. What then is happening is that 100,000 vehicles is the capacity, and it reaches capacity like we had in Gauteng. So the only other place for those traffic to go and travel is on the alternative or supporting road network. I know I'm trying to it's a very abstract thing I'm trying to explain. But what's happening is it's filling up the supporting road network. As soon as you add capacity to this road network, the supporting road network gets a relief. We were requested by the local authorities to do extensive modeling for them to demonstrate actually the benefit to them of upgrading the freeways in Gauteng, despite the fact that they get told. Because it doesn't make sense to add capacity on a freeway network and toll it at such a level that you're not utilizing that additional capacity. And that is why the relief provided by the upgraded freeways in Gauteng resulted in about 50 to 40% of traffic to simply move on that additional capacity on the network. So the freeways are improved to assist the whole network, not to burden the whole network. And it was clearly demonstrated, it was the councils asked for these things, and it was reported back in council meetings, the impact of an improved road network. That then also leads to the social and economic impacts. It is very extensive in terms of the studies that's available. This report is on our website, done by the Business School of the University of Cape Town, to calculate the benefits, the benefit cost ratio, the advantage of having the roads taken in consideration. The cost of tolling was an 8-to-1 benefit cost ratio, and the internal rate of return was in the order of 53%, which is exceptionally high. It relates back to the cost of congestion that I think is underestimated, the value of time, the physical time that gets lost. With the tolling, it allows the earlier implementation of the upgrades. It allows then the savings in terms of congestion and lost time, and it look at the maintenance, operations, lighting, intelligent transport systems, the camera systems we have, medical response vehicles, towing vehicles, all to ensure that if there's an incident, it's detected and cleared as soon as possible. Funeral is it's a level 3, I think, state-owned entity. We are not making a profit, so there is not a profit at the end of the day. The financial model is there, which is collecting money. I just want to state we're different than Eskom. We are not a profit-making agency. So all the money that's coming in goes back in terms of a specific portfolio, whether it's a toll portfolio or a toll route or whatever. And this is also not a concession contract. They are PPPs where there's a concession contract and the concessionaire then bids on that contract and it operates for 30 years. Then it's completely outside. This is a state implemented toll road. All the contracts went through a competitive bidding process, the toll systems, toll operations, everything is a competitive bidding process, and we pay a service provider in terms of the services he's delivering, which he must prove every month. I've issued so many invoices or I've done this and this, and there's a rate that is tendered. So Sanral as an agency is not making a profit, and I think I can state that our books are audited annually and we haven't received any qualified audits in the history of Sanral. The question of the most economical way of doing it, this is the state-of-the-art technology, and the implementation in Gauteng is regarded as the most advanced implementation in the world at this stage, in terms of its capability and the way it was constructed. The issue of profit and if money is leaving the country, it's made up of a joint venture between a local South African company and an international company, and if there are any profits, then that will be divided in terms of the shareholding in the company. If there are any losses, then obviously that will also be divided. But what's important is that Sunroll is part of this was an open tender. We've invited everybody to participate. But South Africa is part of the global village. We cannot select it sometimes that our service providers must tender in international contracts, but we exclude the rest of the world to tender on our contracts, and we followed due procurement processes. I think I'm done. I think the outstanding issue is the issue.
Sorry, just as far as the National Credit Act is concerned, the exclusion is for a specific reason. The National Credit Act actually manages credit providers and normal credit agreements. However, the definition in the legislation of incidental credit agreements is quite wide, and due to the wording in that legislation, somebody who on day 20 after a specific debt has been incurred has still not paid it falls into that legislation as for an incidental credit agreement. Sunroll's ETOL system is essentially a prepaid system. The moment you pass underneath the gantry and you have not made any arrangements to pay or you haven't bought a day pass, you technically commit a criminal offence under the Sunroll legislation, and they do not grant you any credit for driving on that road. Previously, it was not a problem because we did not have open road tolling. We only had plazas where you could not actually drive onto the road unless you paid. Because of the fact that the system now allows for that, a seven-day grace period is given to people to pay. But if that person then goes beyond that 7 days and they refuse to pay, then when day 20 arrives, due to the definition, you could actually get to the point where somebody would argue it's an incidental credit agreement. It makes no sense, and in terms of legal opinion, we have obtained Section 34 of the Sunroll Act requires that they must have separate accounts for their tolls. It may only be used to investigate other toll roads and pay for surveys in that regard, to maintain and operate the toll roads, and to pay off any loans that they've already accumulated because of the existing toll roads. So if the tariffs are published by the minister, and those tariffs have to be collected by Sunroll or its contracting partner, then they must collect that specific amount. If you look at the way in which the National Credit Act works, it basically allows a person to come and show that he is not in a position to pay, and that certain additional arrangements are made by the court, which may mean that some of that debt is being written off. Sunroll would then not be compliant in terms of the PFMA or their own Section 34 of their own legislation, because they are obliged to collect a specific amount. And because of that, and the uncertainty as to the application of the National Credit Act, it was thought wise to actually make an exclusion here so that there is no further arguments in this regard to state that the National Credit Act does not apply. It was never the intention. It was just the wording of the Credit Act that caused this problem as far as the legislation is concerned.
That is all, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Department members. That was the presentation from the Department and also from the legal side. Therefore, it's for us now to take these matter facts further to the next round. I think I'd like to thank you very much, Department and the legal sector, to come and to be able to stand for these questions, because I know some of the people, they don't feel okay to come to the committee because they call it a grilling. We're not grilling you. We wanted to certify ourselves so that when we took a decision, we know exactly we took that decision on this basis. Therefore, we are left with one or two things. I'll say one or two things. Furthermore, is to agree with the bill itself of the committee, but yes, it's left. But I would suggest that maybe to give this opportunity that next week we request a summary of all the submission. I don't know how many are they, if one or zero, whatever. And then also to allow the members to go through that exercise, which is similar to this one. And then after that, we'll be left with one or two consider the bill itself as NCOP. But I want you to clarify this one, that to emphasize, some people, they feel that it's a lecture. It's not a lecture. People must know that what bill are we dealing about, so that we mustn't complicate things. It must be clear that what bill are we dealing about. What I'm suggesting is that we go back to our parties, to to everybody who feels that 1-2-3. So that next week, when we took a decision, we'll be taking a decision on base of what we have collected. Therefore, I'll request that we adjourn this meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Oh, really?